Hi, this is Bob Shaw. You're listening to Top Shelf Hockey. All things hockey, all the time.
So let's get right into it. Let's talk about these playoffs, because first of all, if there's anything you can say about these playoffs, is they have been absolutely unpredictable. I guess not for you, though, because I'm taking a look here at your bracket, and you're kind of crushing it. You got most of the picks right.
Yeah, all of the picks right, actually. I've been very smug about it. So I apologize to you and all my other friends that also watch hockey, because I've never shied away from an opportunity to gloat about me getting all the picks right. But yeah, it's been really exciting. And I don't know, I just love the first round of the playoffs. I think it's like some of the best hockey. Like, I usually don't watch a lot of hockey during the regular season, but I try to catch as much as possible when the playoffs roll around. It's just, I don't know, just a different beast entirely.
That's a good strategy, honestly, to have, because the first part of the season, I didn't really watch anything at all. I was just watching. In fact, I was just watching Washington games just to see if Ovechkin scored, just because all I cared about was the record. Yeah. I didn't even care. I mean, the Canucks are in a dumpster fuck. And that's before the quote, Vamos Gatos thing got started here, because the Panthers decided to completely miss the first half of the season, and then they've put on a pretty good end of the second half of the season to sneak into the playoffs, and now they're kind of surprising everybody. But you had Florida going all the way to the finals in your bracket, so I'll start with that. Why did you pick Florida to go to the finals?
Yeah, honestly, my bracket was kind of just all vibes, because in the past I've like tried to like be serious about it and dig into the stats and try to predict what happens, and it's hockey, it's a playoff, it's really a coin toss. No matter like what people try to make the narratives out to be, like it's almost impossible to predict. So this year I was just like, I'm just gonna go with what feels right, just what I feel in the gut, just go with the vibes. And yeah, the vibes were telling me that the Panthers are going all the way this year. I don't know, they're just a really fun team. I liked them a lot last year, and they're definitely not as good as they were last year. I think they took a big step back, but they just have so much forward talent. And now that they have Matthew Tkachuk, I mean, he's been, I don't know how much you've watched him in the playoffs, but he's just been amazing to watch and just see how dominant he is. And he was like dominant in the regular season, and he's dominant now. And it's just, I don't know. I think he and the rest of the team can drag them. You know, I think they have maybe not the best goaltending, and the defense looks a little bit shaky, but I think that forward group can drag them through the playoffs.
Well, so I'm not going to pretend that the Panthers are obviously the number one ticket down here. It's still probably Miami Heat and all that. But I think Fort Lickerdale, as they call it, is going to go crazy if the Panthers actually do win the cup or something like that, or even make a run for it. But your vibes seem to be pretty correct, because I got the stats right here. And Matt Tkachuk is leading all players right now with 14 points. He's ahead of Matthews and McDavid and Leon and Marner. I mean, those guys they're all close in the pack, but they've all got either 10 or 11 points. But this guy's got 14 points, and I think something like 11 points in his last – some or 9 points in his last four games. I can't remember. I saw the thing this morning, but he is just crazy out there. And apparently, I thought he was getting kind of, you know, taking a bunch of hits from the Leafs, because they played well in that sense, in the physical sense. But he apparently also dished out more than four hits back. So he's been all over the place. I didn't even know who Montour was until, like, the game I went to, like, in March, and then he scored a goal that night, and then he's just been, I think he put up 70 points as a defenseman, and then he's got, like, a crazy story, because he used to be a forward, and then he switched to defense later on. It was just, he's been unbelievable, but your vibes have been pretty good. I think one of the other questions I had for you was, so, have you ever seen a playoff series like this, where it's just, you know, all the road teams just keep winning? Like, Seattle not only beat Colorado, but they won last night despite Pavelski scoring four goals coming back from injury. So I guess that's my next question. How did you pick Seattle winning in seven against the defending cup champions? And what are your thoughts on
that? Again, it was mostly vibes. I think, I think a lot of people thought I was a little bit crazy at picking, you know, an expansion team over the team that just won the Stanley Cup. But I think, you know, I think Florida winning over Boston, I think I got a little bit lucky on that one. But I think there was definitely like a viable pathway, even at the start of the playoffs, for the Kraken to beat the Avalanche. Like this Avalanche team isn't the team from last year, right? They lost, Landeskog's gone with injury. They lost.
Well, Grubauer's literally the Seattle goalie now, and he used to be Colorado's goalie. So that's like the biggest.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the goalie they have right now. I think any goalie, right, whether it's Kempfer or Georgiev now, kind of you can just kind of slot any goalie, any like half decent goalie into that system, and it kind of works just because of how dominant Colorado plays. But yeah, they've lost, like I said, they lost Burakovsky, they lost their second line center, Nazem Kadri. Like, this is just a very, a much less deeper team than they were last year, just because how the way the cap works. And yeah, I think like Seattle was like a team that's like uniquely positioned to beat them because they have that depth, right? They don't have any superstars. Maybe one day Matt Beniers will be one. I think Vince Dunn maybe is like on the cusp of that, but they don't have anyone that can really take over the game or that you can expect to take over a game night in, night out. But they have just so many. I think they had the most scorers like that had over 14 goals this season. I think they had like 14 or 15 guys like chip in at least 14 goals this season, something like that. I don't have the exact number, but they just have a lot of scoring talent throughout their entire lineup. And I think that made them uniquely positioned to beat the Avalanche.
No, for sure. And I think just kind of moving on out of the big one, that's Toronto. They finally got past round one, and they're now playing Florida. And you and I both have, parts down there in Toronto or up there in Toronto, and it's gonna be a fun series just to kind of chirp and poke back and forth with him about that series. But how do you what do you think? And you think in Florida? Well, you picked Florida to win against Toronto. But what do you think now that you've actually seen him play? One game at least.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I think it's going to be a close one. I think they're pretty, at least on paper, I think they're pretty evenly matched. Like, I think Toronto probably has a better defense group, but they have, I think, I don't know. Maybe, I think Matthews and Matt and Tkachuk are probably tied, but I think after that, like, I think Marner's probably better than any of the other forwards that Florida has, and I would say the same for Nylander. But then also Florida again has all the depth. To make up for maybe the lack of high-end talent up top. So I think it's going to be pretty even matched. Yeah, I think, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see like how like the matchups go and how tactical Toronto gets. I think, with Ryan O'Reilly, with Toronto acquiring Ryan O'Reilly, that kind of like gives them a lot more options this playoffs. And I think that gives them like maybe the ability if they play their cards right to be able to either have him as that shut down number three center, and to kind of shut down maybe that Tkachuk line while Marner and Auston Matthews can cook, because they Marner and Auston, I think like Toronto's been criticized a lot, right, for their stars not showing up,
Yeah, definitely.
but in the series with Tampa Bay, like they were all on fire, and I think that's kind of their pathway to winning the cup this or winning the series is allowing their stars to kind of just cook and produce, and not take maybe the heaviest matchups. I don't know. What do you think about the
Yeah,
series?
I think just based on what I saw in game one, I don't think the Leafs played bad. They made a couple of mistakes and the Panthers capitalized on it. Obviously, the Montour goal was right before what would have been a power play, so that's a penalty mistake type thing. The Verhaeghe goal was a perfect pass to him, and then the first goal, I think the Leaf player was out of position, and I think Steve Dangle talks about it where he was just like, oh, because the Leafs player didn't check Kirk Cous not Kirk Cousins Cousins from Florida, I
Yeah.
don't know, I don't think football, but Cousins
Nick
was.
Cousins, yeah.
Yeah, he was just wide open, and he had a tap-in goal. So I think those were some mistakes Toronto made. But I don't think Toronto played a bad game. Bobrovsky probably saved a bunch of goals. Obviously, the one with the lat near the end with the pad, that one was probably a sure goal. That maybe I guess 9 out of 10 times the Leafs would probably score that one. But the Panthers stopped that one. So I don't think the Leafs have played bad, and you know that they're going to come back strong in game two. Road teams have been winning, so honestly, it wouldn't even surprise me if even if Florida wins tomorrow in game two, if they lose game three and four here in Florida, because road teams just somehow, I don't know. I haven't it, a lot of times, people you might have like one team that's like really on the road in the playoffs or something, but I haven't seen it where it's like
Yeah.
all the teams are just winning road games, and it's like no one knows what's going on there. And Toronto did that in Tampa Bay. They got blown out in game one, and then they won big in game two, and they came to Tampa Bay and won some down in Tampa. So I think it's gonna be a close series. I was gloating a little bit saying Panthers in six, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to game seven.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a close one. And your boy Luke Shen has been, I don't know, he's been a big surprise. Watching him in Vancouver, like I thought for sure, he's cooked. He's had a really respectable career, but I was like, I don't know if this guy is an NHL defenseman anymore. But so let me give you
Yeah,
some
I miss Luke
stats because
Shen.
I think it's insane how good he's been. So over seven playoff games, when he's on the ice, at 5-on-5, his team is up 8-2, and they're controlling 62% of like the expected goals.
Wow. What's his plus minus?
On ice at 5-on-5, he's plus six. So
Wow.
they've
Oh, that's
scored eight and then been on the ice for two against.
pretty good.
Yeah, he's leading the Leafs in expected goals on ice percentage. He's leading them on goals for percentage. Like he's just, I don't know if he's just getting lucky, but he's also playing with Morgan Rielly, who like, tends to give up a lot. And so it's been really surprised to see like just how dominant they've been on the ice.
Yeah, Morgan Rielly's had a good playoff run too. He's near the top of points for defenseman as well. I think he might be. I think he's got 9 points, the same as Montour. Or no, is it Bouchard and Montour? I think have 9 points, and then Rielly's up there too. So they've
Yeah.
definitely got defense, and then
I
they've got depth pieces now too, right? They got Ryan O'Reilly, which is the playoff type player that you want. Mark Giordano's experienced guy who used to be a captain of the league.
Yeah, he's still very good. I get a little bit nervous when he's put in more like offensive roles, 'cause I feel like, I don't know, I think at this point in his career, like the play kind of dies on a stick a lot. Like I just see him just like kind of hacking away at the puck in the offensive zone and kind of giving up on a more dangerous chance, but he's still very good defensively and good at moving the puck up the ice, even at this age. And yeah, it's weird saying this as a Sens fan, but like I wouldn't be mad if the Leafs won the cup because I'd love to see Mark Giordano erase that cup.
Well, I know if Toronto wins the cup, are you gonna finally take the train down from Montreal to Toronto
No,
for the to go visit
I
Parthi?
don't think I'd go that far. I think I'd lose a little bit of my Sens street cred if I did that.
just a Stanley Cup parade and all that.
Yeah,
But well, who knows? I guess I gotta ask you now about the Rangers, because I don't know if they were cup contenders or not, but they'd certainly loaded up at the trade deadline. They went out and got Patrick Kane, and
yeah.
they won the first two games and then lost New Jersey. And now I don't know, what do you have to say about that series?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest surprise wasn't New Jersey winning, but New Jersey not winning fast enough. Like, I don't know. I just thought, I don't know. I'm not a big believer in this New York Rangers team. I think they're not very dominant 5-on-5. I think they rely a lot, I think too much on their goaltending. And I mean, we saw in that game seven, like Shesterkin did everything he could to keep that puck out of the net. And the team just didn't have enough juice to give him any goal support. And so I think if you're a team that's relying that heavily on your goaltending and you can't give him any support, I think that's a recipe for failure, especially as a team, with a team that plays as fast as the New Jersey Devils. Yeah, they're just going to find ways to overpower you and get all those rush chances and kind of overwhelm you with all that talent they have up front with Hughes and Timo Meier, Nico Hischier. Like they just have so many good players. I don't know. I think the Rangers were lucky to come out of that one in seven. And yeah, I think, I don't know.
Well,
I
speaking of New Jersey, still they're playing game one as we're recording right now. It's 4-1 Carolina with about 3 minutes, four
yeah, that
minutes left
one's
in the
it.
game. It's a low, like there hasn't been that many shots. I think 22 shots for Hurricanes right now, 18 for New Jersey, and Carolina scored 3 goals on like the first 12 shots of the game,
Yeah.
and New Jersey had 1 shot on net. So Carolina has come out swinging. They've always been a team the last few years that you can't really count out. They haven't gone all the way, but
Yeah.
they've certainly been a good team. So they certainly could very well
Yeah.
play in the next round, and I wouldn't be surprised if they went to the finals.
Yeah, I think Carolina is like, I think they have what the Rangers didn't have, and that's kind of a system and structure where they can I think they can do a pretty good job of matching up with the Devils, because they play like a very old school. Like it's weird calling them old school because you know like the whole bunch of jerks thing and like there's like you know there's kind of like young, hot team coming up and they're kind of like the new bandwagon team and people don't really and they're you know they're like the analytics team, right? They have Eric Helsky in their front office who's been working his magic, so people don't really think of them as an old school team, but they play very much. You know, get the puck on the net, create a bunch of chaos, and just play a really strong possession game, forecheck really hard, and a lot of the things that the hockey men love. And they do it really well and they do it really effectively. And I think they can use that to kind of overpower the Devils, who kind of rely more on attacking off the rush, on kind of being fast. And I think, yeah, I think Carolina can kind of clog up the neutral zone. I think they have a bunch of players that play really good two-way hockey. And yeah, I think it's going to be tough for New Jersey to break through, even though I have them beating the Hurricanes.
No, that's, those are some solid points. Definitely want to get one last team in there before we switch to a couple other things. But Edmonton, you know, that's one of the teams, as you know,
Oh, yeah.
I, you know, despite we're both on the, you know, last time we were doing this, I think you were, well, it was during COVID. So were you back in Vancouver at the time?
Yeah, it was.
So we both were on Pacific time. It was a lot easier to tune into some of these later games. But I've stayed up late to watch some of these Oilers games, and they've been very exciting. They've got a very good team. It's not just Leon and Connor McDavid, even though that power play is hitting like 60% plus conversion rate. But Evan Bouchard leads all defensemen. Basically, the only critique I have, and they've got depth too. They can get. I
Yeah.
wouldn't say all four lines rolling, but they definitely can get top. Their top three lines
Yeah,
can
especially like
chip in.
players like Klim Kostin, just I don't know, overnight turning into a playoff hero after not really being all that special during the regular season has been really cool to watch too.
So they've got, yeah, and they've got obviously what they call a two-headed monster in Leon and Connor McDavid. But then you also, if you're playing against the Oilers, you can't discount Evander Kane. Zach Hyman's had a pretty good, I don't know if he's had as good of a playoffs as last year, but because he scored some big goals last year. But he's still been pretty good. The only critique, obviously, for the Oilers is the goaltending. I mean, they you know, Skinner hasn't been great. Jack Campbell came in and won a game for him, but then they went back to Skinner. So I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of frustrated by that. Like, and you know, I've told you this. Like, why is Skinner in net, not Jack Campbell?
I don't know. I think they should keep him. I think they should go with, I don't know. I think that's really easy to go with, you know, the hot hand, or, you know, I think a lot of NHL coaches kind of operate on results. And if our team won last time, let's keep the same thing going. But I think it makes sense to, you know, you go with the biggest, you know, if you're trying to make a smart decision, right? You want to make it with all the data you have available. So I don't think you can like just look at that one game and just, you know, just Skinner's performance over the series and think, well, you know, we have to go to Jack Campbell now. He's clearly the better goalie. Because I think if you look at the larger sample size, it's very clear that, you know, Jack Campbell just hasn't had it, and has struggled a lot at the NHL level. And I think he even spent some time down in the AHL. So unless there's like a very discernible weakness that opposition teams are exploiting against Skinner, and he's, you know, more vulnerable, against their opposition, I think it makes a lot of sense to go back to him and go back to the goalie that you think has the most that has the best chance of giving or that will give you the best chance of winning moving forward, rather than, you know, playing into recency bias. But
Well, that's,
it'll be
you know,
really interesting to see how that battle shakes out.
I can't argue with you there, because you know, I was just literally picking a couple sample sizes of the just the first few playoff games, and you've actually kind of looked at not only Jack Campbell's career, but picked a larger sample size. So I don't disagree with you there on that point. I guess two quick things want to before we end it. First of all, Brian Boerke is no longer in the NHL. Pittsburgh got rid of him along with the other front office guys. Now it's true that a lot of our love for Berkey is kind of more nostalgia, fan of his since obviously the Canucks and then the Ducks days, and then just being on TV all the time. But I don't know. What do you think? You think it's just Pittsburgh wanting to house clean, or is it just you know, like what are your thoughts on the fact that Berkey's gone?
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably, I don't know like who was making the calls in Pittsburgh the last couple of years, but I think they made the right choice in What's their GM, general manager's name? Or the one they fired? I can't remember his name right now. It's not coming to my head, the top of my head. But I think they were very justified in firing that whole front office. Yeah, I think they just haven't really capitalized on these last few seasons of Crosby and Malkin, who are still very good. And yeah, like you look at their trade deadline this year, like they were like waving guys and like roster guys that were contributing, they were just waving them and risking losing them for nothing just to create all this cap space. And then what do they do with the cap space? They go out and trade a pick for Mikael Granlund, who's very clearly past his prime, has 2 more years at a very expensive cap hit. Like I think if you're trading for a guy like that, like you should be the one receiving picks. Instead, they're the one, they're the team that's,
That's giving it up.
yeah, they're giving up a pick. And yeah, I think I would have liked them to be a little bit more creative and take a bigger swing at the trade deadline. And I think I know there were talks about JT Miller, and I think we clown on JT Miller a lot in Vancouver, and rightfully so. I think there are a lot of weaknesses to his game, but I think like even if they traded for him, obviously the contract's scary. But I think he would have fit in really well in Pittsburgh, in not having to do like a lot of the defensive heavy lifting, but just kind of being that complimentary winger for either Crosby or Malkin, and not having to play at center, which he's I think it's very clear that he's not a number one or number two center, and he's better fit as a top line winger who can just put a lot of pucks in the net at 5-on-5 and on the power play. I mean, there were just so many other options they could have gone with. And I think that's kind of an indictment of the team that they didn't do more to maximize this era of Crosby and Malkin. And yeah, I think they made, I think, yeah, I think it was justified in at the end of the day, Brian Burke was at the top of the organizational pyramid, and he's the one that bears responsibility. But I will say, like, I think, you can criticize a lot of his hockey ops decisions, but it's always entertaining when he's at the head of a team. He always makes these big moves.
Well,
Whether
right?
it's
We
going
got
all the
we
way back
literally
to
we got into
Vancouver
this because
with,
of, blockbuster Brian Burke moves and all that.
I mean, there's like, the huge moves with the Sedins, obviously. And even when he was in Toronto, he was making, these really big deals. And, some didn't pan out, some did. But it was always fun when he was the general manager that, or, the president of hockey ops at for an NHL team. So, yeah, I think it'd
Yeah,
be fun to see him again if he
hopefully he
wants
comes
to.
yeah, hopefully he comes back on TV again, 'cause that would be great.
Yeah, I think he's a pretty entertaining personality. I think, sometimes I think he says a lot of stuff that I'm just like, a little bit of, dinosaur noises. But I think he's always very entertaining, and yeah, I respect him a lot. I don't always agree with his opinions, but I think, especially like, with all the, all the controversy about the Pride Knights and just how upfront he's been about that, how unwavering he's been in supporting, Pride Knights,
Yeah, he's been good
yeah,
on
I
it. He's
think,
been supporting it since, I think, way
yeah,
back in like
it's very cool to
2011.
see. I don't want to give him more credit than he deserves, because, he's obviously doing it, or he's kind of come to this part in his life because of, his son. And there's a lot of things that I think he still has a blind spot towards, but he's, I don't know, I think it's very cool to see someone have these kind of progressive opinions, someone who's kind of considered like an old hockey man. And I think, yeah, having him in the sport in some way is an overall net plus. So I definitely like to see him back, either on our screens or at some NHL team.
Well, we'll leave it at that. That's again a great episode. Thanks so much for coming on, Mulhar. As you know, 2 years later, we decided to relaunch this stuff from the Sunshine State here in Florida. And who knows how this will go. And obviously, the goal is to continue covering it through covering the playoffs, and then in the off season, there'll be a little bit of a drop down. And then I don't know what we'll do in the regular season, because again, that's 82 games, and it's a lot of content, but. So the frequency might go down then, but at least right now I think we're in pretty good hands for weekly episodes even, or to see what happens. So thanks so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, it's always a blast talking hockey with you, and I'm looking forward to what else you've got cooked up.
Sounds good, man. All right, take care.
Take care.